And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just something I've noticed. Bargain hunting is back. I mean, bargain hunting's always been around. We always love a great deal. But man, everywhere you look, people are bargain hunting. You know, there's so many great ways to find great deals. Hey, I have a great find in your bargain hunting journey. Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby, and truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price that's a real bargain when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That is a bargain. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show from the Uniden America Studios. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, we are Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. All right, just an update from Columbia University. Remember, they were supposed to have a deadline at midnight for negotiations. Then around 3:15 a.m., a campus spokesperson released a statement saying that university officials and protest organizers were hashing out four main agreements, and there is now a 48-hour window for negotiations. There was no mention of an 8 a.m. deadline extension, which had been talked about earlier. Those terms include students removing a significant number of tents, that those protesting are only Columbia students, that those protesters comply with FDNY safety implications, and that student protesters have taken steps to make the encampment welcome to all and have prohibited discriminatory or harassing language. No, right. Get out.
Yeah.
You don't negotiate with people that are pro-terrorists.
If you could just tone down the language somewhat.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Demonstrators said they would not continue to negotiate. By the way, it's like the... I'm going to read this and I'll make my statement. Yeah. Demonstrators said they would not continue to negotiate with the administration without a written commitment that the administration will not be using the New York City Police Department or the National Guard on the students. Yeah. Governor Hochul said she has no plans to call on the National Guard. It's almost like Columbia is Israel and the protesters are Hamas trying to come to some type of an agreement, and the president comes in and screws it all up.
Mm-hmm.
We'll face no consequences no matter what, and then we'll agree to something that we won't agree to.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, just amazing. Just amazing.
Insanity.
It is. Just, you shake your head. All right, on inflation, this really, really interesting. This did not get... I think the news exposure that it should have gotten. The money circulating in the U.S. is expanding rapidly, a warning sign that inflation may continue to surge higher. The so-called M2 money supply includes currency, savings departments, and retail money market funds. Data released Tuesday afternoon showed the money supply rose to its highest level over a year. And is up 0.8% compared to a year ago. This is the first year-over-year increase in the money supply since it began shrinking following rate hikes in 2022. Following the latest increase, the money supply is now higher than at any time since March of last year. M2 has expanded in 3 of the last 6 months and in 4 of the last 5 weeks. The rise shows that the Fed's battle against inflation has run out of steam. The consumer price index was up 3.47% in March, compared with 12 months earlier, an acceleration from the 3.17% gain recorded in the prior month. This was the highest rate of inflation since September of last year. Inflation generally follows M2's path with the lag, although the timing of the lag is unknown and variable. The growth of M2 suggests that more inflation may be in store later this year or perhaps even into next year. This could cause further delays in the timing of a Fed rate and even push the Fed to raise rates, a development current market prices indicate is regarded on Wall Street as completely off the table. Well, it's always off the table until it's on the table.
Well, yeah, no, I love that. Oh, that's off the table. November comes. Definitely they're going to be raising rates.
Wow. You said it. And I agree with it. You said it first, but I agree with it and have agreed with it all along. I've never felt just like, and I went through this in the 70s. I remember it. Many people are younger than me. May not remember as well.
A lot of people are younger.
But
it's amazing how many people are younger than you.
But that was one of the problems. It's why it lasted so long.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com and use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
You know, we went over the inflation rates, or we went over the interest rates,
mm-hmm.
what they were in the 70s into the 80s, mind-boggling interest rates
is
what it was in that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get a hold of it then until Reagan came into office, and Volcker just skyrocketed.
Oh.
I mean, the rates were, what, 19, 20, 21%, something like that.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. And so we've always viewed here and believe that the Fed isn't serious. They're more hopeful than serious.
They pretend to be hopeful, but I really wonder. You know, because they talk as if they're hopeful, right?
Yes.
It's always this, and that's the ruse. Will we know when you're serious about inflation? Because you're making serious moves about inflation. You know, trickling in a quarter of a point here and there and then getting it to the point. You know, that was the thing. I think they thought that they could sell it on more consistent moves, right, rather than any one bigger jump, right? So over and over again, we see that, and then we'll just be consistent here and we'll edge it up. I think it's a combination of what you're trying to convince the market of and maybe what you're trying to convince yourself of. You believe that you've got that magic wand. Well, if you're going to make that move, then make the move. and your target rate should be higher than it is right now. It should have been all along. And not that I expected them to jump in massive ways. And I understand, you and I talked about it. You know, when we go from, what was the prime mortgage rate? Right at about 3%, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but I mean, in recent years, you can go back to the whole idea of 0%, right? So going from 0% to a target rate of 5.5, 5.75, whatever, is a significant jump. We talked about the effect of that. 0 to close to 6. That's a significant jump. Because back in the day, when it went from, and I remember my parents in Del Rio, they were closing on a house. We were moving off base, and they were closing on a house. And while they were waiting to close, it jumped to like 14%. It was insane. I remember that. And I wasn't even having to make the payments, you know? And so I remember those things. But you weren't going from this mindset of zero. The mindset of zero is the changer. It may be, it in fact, is the case when you talk about the difference between where they started and where they ended up during the Volcker years, right, on interest rates versus where we started here and where we ended up in the current target rate for the Fed. Yeah, there's a much greater difference. But the mindset is different when you're starting at zero, when you're talking about virtually free money. That's a much different message. A completely different message. In fact, it was unique to, in fact, new to a generation, this whole idea of 0%. You know, think about that. I remember my wife and I in 2002-ish, maybe, one of our properties looking at being able to streamline to a 4.25, but we had to do it and take it down to a 10-year term. And I remember that going, oh my gosh, 4.25, right? So when we went to zero, when we went to this, you know, and it's insanity, because you're creating, it's a lot like the pathology of dependency. You're creating this mindset in the market, and I think this is what we're going through is an example. The market's waiting to, hey, when are we going to get back to zero? Hey, what about zero? Hey, when can we get back to zero? And it's not going to happen. I don't believe it's going to happen anytime soon. And it is that same pathology mindset of, hey, we want that, we want to be able to borrow money for free.
I don't know with the because of how rapidly the debt is expanding, you know, whether you're going to be able to, you know, whether interest rates aren't going to have to be higher in order to get people to buy bonds and treasury bills.
Right.
I think that one of the most interesting articles, because it's something that you and I talked about early on, you know, we said this time it's different than even in the 70s when we saw the inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is government spending and the borrowing. And when that article came out a couple of weeks ago,
yeah.
We said, whoa, because the article was based on the fact of, is increasing the interest rates alone going to work, or have we set ourselves up now to a point where it was going to happen eventually, but we know that the inflation was caused by the massive spending during COVID, but also now being accelerated because the Fed isn't buying as much debt.
Right.
You know, they're not buying their own debt, you know, which is just the most bizarre thing.
Which goes along with that market mindset of, you know, hey, borrowing free money, and then at the Fed going, hey, we can just, you know, repurchase our own debt,
right?
You know.
You print money to buy debt, therefore you cause inflation.
Right.
And then what we have right now, it's like, if you want to get a hold of inflation, it cannot just, this was, and again, I don't know, because we've never been here before, at this particular point. But it's a great point to make. We always put it in a question form that will interest rates, since we're not going to raise interest rates to do the job, because we haven't to the point, is it even more important that we cut spending? Well, we're not going to cut spending. Well, you saw the debt right now. Right now, we're at $900 billion in interest payments every year.
Yeah.
Right now.
Right.
And that doesn't include every day we're borrowing, $1 trillion every 100 days it was there for like 9 months from last year till now.
Mm-hmm.
Every 100 days, the debt's going up by $1 trillion. Well, that adds to what you've got to pay in interest payments. We're soon going to be at $1 trillion of interest payments every year, which means $1 trillion of taxpayer money is completely non-productive.
Yeah.
You have to take it just to pay off the interest on the debt. And how does that accelerate inflation? And the thought process is you've got to do it all. You've got to raise interest rates. You've got to cut spending. And I don't see the government, since either of those, doing either of those things will guarantee you a slowdown in the economy, they don't wish to do that.
No. No.
Especially when you measure GDP by government spending, which isn't the same thing as private spending.
Well, I think that was ultimately the play here by Powell, by the Fed, because it's like, okay, let's not go, if we go too far politically, we get the hit on a recession. You know, this whole, well, we believe that, you know, we can mitigate the effects and create a soft landing. Well, the soft landing doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't include the inflation coming back and regaining momentum like what we're seeing right now in the first quarter of this year. And I think it's going to be likely there. I'll say this. There's a good chance it's going to be consistent throughout the year. So this idea of saying, well, but at least we didn't go to 8% and then inflation still remained. Well, the fact is that doing hard things, you know, or accomplishing big things requires doing hard things. And they weren't willing to do the hard things. And that was going up on interest rates to the point of tackling that inflation. You certainly couldn't do it and get it done. You and I were wondering, we thought, okay, if you don't time this right, you're going to be in the heart of an election season and you're going to be dealing with this. Why aren't you making this? This is why I have felt all along Powell was not serious about inflation. And it's likely because he just didn't want to pull the trigger. He didn't want to do what was necessary to get on top of it. And thinking you can get back to your target rate on inflation of 2% by just edging it up ever so slightly each move, clearly is not going to work.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This morning's USDA Farm Report is brought to you by Howe's Products. Tested, trusted, guaranteed since 1920.
One of the unique aspects of the annual National 4-H Conference is answering questions. Annie Cesarini of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture and National 4-H Coordinator explains.
Federal agencies, and we have 20 federal partners, they put forward a question and they ask youth about something that that agency is working on and that they'd like to hear youth opinion on. To give you an example, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they will ask a question about college affordability. What are their ideas for making college more affordable?
This question and answer process is one reason why the National 4-H event is considered a working conference.
The youth work in small groups throughout conference. They'll do research before coming to conference. Then at conference, they'll work together and they put together a 45-minute youth perspective briefing.
With presentations taking place within federal agency sites during the conference. This year's six-day event concludes midweek. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This report brought to you by Cenex Fuels and Lubes.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Did you hear? You know, you and I talk about Charlottesville. The president has brought up Charlottesville again, and again lied about what President Trump said there. He brought up the whole thing about France and the president calling soldiers, or the former president was accused of calling soldiers suckers and losers.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen.
Right.
Didn't happen. And then yesterday he brought up and said that Trump literally told you to inject bleach, which he did not do.
No.
And it was the anniversary. Even the Hill.com says Biden trolls Trump on injecting bleach anniversary. Biden shared a video marking the 4 years of Trump infamously saying, quote, "I see the disinfectant, which knocks it out in a minute. Is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside, almost a cleaning," end of quote. Biden then said, "Don't inject bleach and don't vote for the guy who told you to inject bleach." The video doesn't say it. He said that.
No.
It's really amazing that they're taking three of the biggest lies that the public actually knows about. And that's what they're having Joe Biden out there trying to sell.
Well, you know, I mean, we sit there and wonder how Bragg in New York can come up with these, you know, 34 counts of nothing. And then the whole conspiracy thing based on things that are not crimes. And this is how you get to that point. If you can convince enough people, and in Bragg's case, he only has to convince 12.
About to trigger somebody right now. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. All right, there's the headline. AI can predict political orientations from blank faces.
Is there any such thing as a blank face?
You know what I'm thinking? I always go back to, and it was when Trump was elected, so it had to be early 2017 when you had the Women's March. Remember the picture of the one woman? I don't know if she's a woman or girl, whatever. She doesn't look that old, but just screaming, just absolutely screaming. Her face is just contorted as far as a face can be contorted, and it was like every ounce of her was, ah!
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think you need AI to read that.
Yeah, that's my point. I don't know that there is any such thing as a blank face.
Researchers are warning that facial recognition technologies are more threatening than previously thought and pose serious challenges to privacy after a study found that artificial intelligence can be successful in predicting a person's political orientation based on images of faces that are expressionless.
Yeah, are they?
A recent study in the Journal of American Psychological says an algorithm's ability to accurately guess one's political views is on par with how well job interviews predict job success or alcohol drives aggressiveness, lead author Michael Kaczynski told Fox News. Well, alcohol drives aggressiveness. It puts me to sleep.
Yeah. Well, what if it turns you into a happy person? What if you're a happy drunk?
Yeah, there are happy drunks or mean drunks.
Uh-huh.
The lead author told Fox News Digital that 591 participants filled out a political orientation questionnaire before the AI captured what he described as a numerical fingerprint of their faces and compared them to a database of their responses to predict their views.
I think that people don't realize how much they expose by simply pulling a picture out there. By putting a picture out there, he said, an associate professor. Okay, I see on social media.
Yeah, right, right, yeah.
Yeah, I think the fact that people don't realize how much they expose when they put a picture out there. We know that people's sexual orientation, political orientation, religious views should be protected. It used to be different in the past. You could enter anyone's Facebook account and see, for example, their political views, their likes, the pages they follow. But many years ago, Facebook closed this because it was clear for policymakers and Facebook and journalists that it is just not acceptable. It's too dangerous. But you can still go to Facebook and see anybody's picture.
Well, you can see a lot of people's political views just by their posts.
Well, yeah, that is true. Yeah,
you know, I mean, if they're prone to post stuff. But I don't know that there is anything, any such thing as an expressionless picture. And I would also go, I would also ask the question, let's go back to, because it seems like that they started on the premise of the AI, but who is it that inputs the data for the AI, right? What's the AI learning from? It's learning from data that is out there based on input from analysis from people. So that would be my question. Let's go back further than the AI and talk about what intelligence it's using and where it comes from.
Yeah, I'm looking for what is it on a person's expressionless face that gives AI the idea that you're liberal or conservative? What is the point? What is it looking at in your face to make that determination?
Well, if your eyes are always filled with tears, does that mean that you're necessarily that you're a liberal? I'm just asking a question, by the way. I don't need more email. So I'm just asking a question. If every picture your eyes are filled with tears, could you just assume without AI, could each of our fathers who are both in their 90s, could they assume that person is a liberal? It could be, or it just could be that they're a child. Children often cry, especially if a child doesn't like having its picture taken, it will have tears in its eyes every time. There's no such thing as expressionless.
You could use it in elementary school if it could figure out what kids are going to be conservative, and then they go to re-education camps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A friend of mine who, wow, this is weird. We've known each other since we were essentially kids, in our late teens, early 20s. And he went to college, criminal justice, became a cop, and now he's teaching law enforcement classes, and he's teaching interrogation techniques. And they know what the techniques, not just by the words that are used, but they know the body language, and we've seen this over and over again. They know the body language a person uses when it comes to if you're doing an interrogation of somebody, mm-hmm. and they're not telling the truth. There are certain tells. There are certain tells on their face. There are certain tells in people's eyes. We know this, by the way, as creatures, just in any scenario. We can often look into somebody's eyes.
Oh.
And it you may say, well, they don't really have an expression, but when you actually look into their eyes, there appears to be concern, there appears to be anxiety, there appears to be a number of things. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I had my human lie detector, my father, when I was growing up, where he'd ask me a question, I'd lie to him, he'd say, I know you're lying to me, your pupils are moving back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Which is you looking for an answer. Your pupils are seeking an answer to give your dad that
yes.
you think is going to fly.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so dad knew I was lying.
Right.
And I was lying.
Right. Yeah.
Who took the silver dollar off my dresser?
Yeah, right.
I was flying back and forth all around the head. I have no idea.
What does a person even need with money?
I use it as an example. I never took a silver dollar off my father's dresser. I want to make it clear.
That's funny you say that. I was at Dad's this past weekend, and we were going over some very old, a few old silver dollars that he has, 1889, 1880. They're not, like, worth, like, millions of dollars. I think they're worth maybe 20, 30 bucks a piece or something. But I love looking at old coins, and they were silver dollars. And the same thing. My dad, by the time I was born, I'll say by the time I could tell lies, I mean talk, was a seasoned investigator. And you couldn't, there was no way around that. If Dad was asking you a question, what you did with Mom is you kind of acted annoyed as you were running out front to go play. When Mom said, well, did you brush your teeth? Well, yeah, Mom, of course I brushed my teeth. And by the way, don't check my toothbrush. It's dry because I dried it. With Dad, did you brush your teeth? Yes. Because the next question would be, are there any witnesses to you brushing your teeth? Let me ask you, how many times a day do you brush? My dad would handle it just like a seasoned investigator, so you couldn't lie. I think that the psychology of it is interesting to look at, but AI learns from data input from people. AI gathers information, and it's interesting to think of, okay, all of these things we've learned, now we can funnel into one resource, if you want to call it that, to say, all right, this could be that, this could be that. I would love to see the accuracy, and I would also love to see what that data input for that AI actually is based on.
I want to see more of that, the story, to see exactly what does the algorithm look for. But one thing that popped into my mind, there's another story out this week that people that are liberal are more depressed, you know, and it's going through the studies. Pew had a study on it and said people that are liberals are not as happy as people that are conservatives. Now, you and I talked about, you know, one of the things is if you're a conservative, you're extremely grateful for what is perceived as the little things, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you understand and you're grateful for your freedom because you understand somebody sacrificed and fought for that.
Mm-hmm.
You understand that freedom just doesn't come from existing.
Right.
And so you become extremely grateful. And I do believe that part of being a conservative is you're grateful for the things that you have in life. And if you're more liberal and everything has been handed to you and you believe that the government should provide for you and provide you security, that you can never be as happy as somebody who goes out and climbs mountains and accomplishes things and is aggressive in doing so and driven to do so, that those people will always be happier. And are they looking for that? Are they looking for the muscles that may show that you're more sad or depressed, therefore more likely to be liberal? And I'm being serious about this. I'm not making it up. The studies that have been done, there's a bunch of studies that have been done on it and say conservatives are just happier people.
Well, there are things, in fact, if you, let's just say, okay, we could all agree on what an expressionless face is. There are tells. You ever heard of laugh wrinkles?
Yeah.
All right. So those things, and it a lot. I have a friend who has laugh wrinkles around his eyes, and this guy's always smiling or laughing. And he's just seemingly one of these guys that is always happy, but he laughs a lot. He smiles a lot, and you can see it in the wrinkles in his eyes. It's his wife actually kind of, you know, ribs him about it a little bit, but, those would be one thing. There's also, you know, going back to the tell of what an investigator might look for. They can see how your eyebrows move and your forehead moves when you're lying. And there are things that certain people have and certain moves that your positions, your eyebrows are in, I'm told, and I still don't get it, but I'm told that your eyebrows can only really do that when you're lying and in a moment of kind of desperation and you're lying, kind of like your eyes going back and forth mm-hmm. in front of your dad. So if those tells are there as a matter of that happening a lot of times and then it becoming wrinkles on your forehead or anxiety, that can also manifest in a physical way, then, okay, you could say that person is more prone to vote this way as opposed to that way. I could see that. I'm very intrigued by it.
Same
because
with me.
I want to get back to the basis of the data input for that AI and what was that? Because the AI learned from that data input, and that's the information.
And what's it looking for in the formation of your face mm-hmm. that would give them any idea what your political affiliation is?
Right.
By the way, I don't lie to Dan anymore. I mm-hmm. have no reason to, but maybe I should just lie to him to see if he catches me.
Yeah.
Son, why are you lying to me? Come on.
Yeah.
You don't need to lie to me. Well, I'm going to see if you catch me, Dad.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
No, really. What's the motivation? No, we talked about it on the air.
Go to your room.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about this in the upcoming days, but it's slavery reparations 2.0 in California. Trying for it again. Wow. We talked about this the other day. Now they're coming up with more ideas and new plans and new organizations since the first one failed. Remember Newsom? Well, this was never about money. Good God.
The guy who started the whole thing or renewed the whole thing. That's not about money.
It was always about money.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't about. I didn't see one organization when it came to reparations that didn't mention money. Not one. So the white guy comes out and says money isn't an issue. The white leader. Well,
One of the only guys who could actually help to get it done. I mean, it's not going to happen, but the one who started the renewal on the conversation, it's not about money. Why is it always about money? Because you started with the money.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord! We get it! They have chemistry!
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.